Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The man accused of carrying out an execution-style triple murder over stolen money stands trial in Wisconsin again.
Nia Tau is accused of shooting three men back in July 2021 at a remote quarry.
They were found dead at the Romskog Quarry just northeast of La Crosse.
Today, the jury heard from a pathologist who described it as a brutal execution.
Last year, Tau's trial ended in a hung jury. The other suspect, Ratanasak, was given a life sentence earlier this year.
Prosecutors say the motive for the triple murder was a $600 debt.
He's charged with three counts of first-degree intentional homicide as party to a crime.
Nia Tau faced his second jury in Wisconsin today as both sides laid out their case.
This case hinges around a witness. The prosecution says this witness will describe how Tau hunted down a man who owed him money, while the defense says that witness was pressured into naming a killer and chose Tau over the other man.
But Tau's defense attorney says that his client did not pull the trigger and plans to challenge the state's star witness, an eyewitness to the murders, and admits to being on meth at the time of the crime.
In the summer of 2021, in a remote area outside of La Crosse, Wisconsin, just along the Minnesota border, employees of Milestone Materials reported for work at the Romskog Quarry shortly before 5 a.m. The quarry is pretty secluded, thick woods covering both sides of the road, no homes or businesses nearby, and the quarry itself has a gravel driveway with a double metal gate that's closed and locked when the workers leave each day. When they arrive in the mornings, they pull in the gravel drive, which is just long enough to park in so that they're off the street, and then they unlock the gates so that the employees can get in. But on Friday, July 23rd, 2021, as employees arrived to begin their workday, the bodies of three young men were blocking the metal gates to the quarry. Each had been shot multiple times in the head and torso, wallets laid at the feet of two of the victims, and shell casings scattered around their bodies. At 4:57 a.m., La Crosse County Sheriff's Department was dispatched to the scene, and the investigation into the gruesome executions of Peng Lohr, Trevor Maloney, and Nemo Yang was officially underway. By lunchtime, the Sheriff's Department and the Wisconsin Department of Justice were hearing a detailed account of what happened from an eyewitness, a woman who said not only did she witness what happened, but she's the one who drove the victims there. What investigators heard from the woman was shocking, a story of greed, pride, drugs, and violence, one that would take another 3 years for the victims' families to get justice. This is 13th Juror Podcast, where we take complicated court cases and present them as compelling stories, breaking down the details and weighing them from a non-legal perspective, just like jurors do. I'm your host, Brandi Churchwell, and in today's episode, we'll discuss the Finding Nemo triple murder trial, the case against Nia Tau. The scene at the quarry was gruesome. The victims were covered in blood and lying close to each other, each with multiple bullet wounds to their heads and torsos, each one executed side by side. Along with the shell casings and the wallets, a red bandana was found lying on County Road M, but no other evidence that they could see right away. All three victims were able to be identified through IDs and a medical card, and based on the way that they were laid out and the blood evidence, investigators were able to determine that they were all killed where they were found. They weren't just brought out here and dumped there. But what they didn't know yet is who did this and why. They began to process the crime scene, but the scene presented some issues. There were multiple shoe prints, and investigators were able to see that there were different types of shoe prints around the bodies, like someone had walked around each of them. And there were multiple tire tracks. It looked like more than one car had been there. But the heat and the wind were making things hard on the CSI team. Now, we'll talk more about this a little bit later, but the driveway into the quarry was kind of like soft dirt. I'll put some pictures up so that you can see on 13thjurorpodcast.com, but the type of dirt that they were working with is soft, so the wind and elements can make impressions lose detail or make them disappear altogether. It's not like tire tracks in mud where it makes a deep, harder impression. As news breaks in the area that there's been a triple homicide, families of the victims are notified, and the La Crosse County Sheriff's Office puts out a media release that said that they were conducting interviews in multiple states to gain information as to the relationship of the victims, as well as their whereabouts on Thursday. They didn't yet know how the victims knew each other or what their connection was, but they said that they believed that they knew their killer, so there was no reason to believe that the public was in danger. They also said there's no connection between the homicides and anyone connected to Milestone Materials, who owns the quarry where they were found. The public was asked to contact the Sheriff's Department or Crime Stoppers with any tips. Later that day, the media released the names of the three victims, Peng Lohr, Trevor Maloney, and Nemo Yang. Peng Lohr was only 24 years old when he was executed. His family described him as a good kid with a big heart. His sister said that he wore his heart on his sleeve and always had a big smile on his face, never failing to make those around him smile and laugh. Peng's family said that his sudden death broke so many hearts, and they never even realized how many people he had touched and impacted until people began reaching out to them after his tragic murder. Trevor Maloney was only 23 years old when he was killed. Trevor and his girlfriend Lindsay had two beautiful daughters, Madeline and Macy, who he doted over, saying that they had him wrapped around their little fingers. Trevor came from a big family, 5 brothers and 3 sisters, and he had a great relationship with his dad. They loved working on cars together, and he loved fishing. His family said he had a strong work ethic at various jobs, from construction to assembly line work at factories. Nemo Yang had just turned 24 years old the day before his body was discovered at the quarry. Nemo was artistic. He was really into art in various forms, especially tattoos and tattooing, and also music. He loved cooking too, and was happy to be going to college to become a chef. Nemo had a promising future, and he was very close to his siblings, but he got caught up with the drug and gang world and had some struggles because of that. Based on testimony and statements, Nemo's mom was also part of that world, and some even say that she was pretty prominent and well-known to those who lived that lifestyle, making it hard for Nemo to steer clear of it. Peng, Trevor, and Nemo all had a lot going for them, but they also had a lot working against them. The Mississippi River runs along the western border of Wisconsin, creating the state line between Wisconsin and Minnesota. La Crosse, where Peng, Trevor, and Nemo resided, is the county seat of La Crosse County, which sits right on that border along the Mississippi. La Crosse is the most populated city along the western border, but it's also one of the most dangerous to live in. The overall crime rate in La Crosse is much higher than the average U.S. city. La Crosse is in the 5th percentile for safety, meaning 95% of cities are safer, and only 5% of cities are more dangerous. On average, a crime occurs every 2.5 hours in La Crosse, and drug and theft crimes are the two that run most rampant. The drug and gang scenes in La Crosse often seem to go hand in hand. According to Sheriff Jeff Wolf, many gangs from bigger cities come to La Crosse to find drug customers, and with them comes the drugs and drug-related crime. There seems to be article after article in the La Crosse Tribune, Wisconsin Public Radio, WXOW News 19, News 8000, and so on, one after another about drug trafficking investigations and drug busts, gang-related violence, guns being seized, and thefts on the rise as drug use in the area increases. Hospitals are inundated with people who are overdosing on street drugs. And last year, La Crosse even set a new record in overdose deaths. Wisconsin Department of Health Services shows La Crosse as one of the worst areas for drug deaths related to methamphetamine. It's a dangerous, dark world that can be easy to fall into and sometimes feel almost impossible to get out of. Pang, Trevor, and Nemo had their whole lives ahead of them, but as they began to struggle with drug use, they also began hanging with some dangerous people. And now, La Crosse County Sheriff's Department needed to investigate to find out which of those dangerous people could possibly be responsible for their murders. The police may not have had any suspects or leads when they began looking into things that Friday morning, but by lunchtime, they would have their first major break when a woman named Bridget Schlicht walked into the La Crosse County Sheriff's Department and told them that she had information about the triple homicide. But she's the one who drove Nemo, Pang, and Trevor out there, and she watched the whole thing happen. Bridget spent the next 11 hours talking to investigators. Like Nemo, Pang, and Trevor, Bridget was struggling with drug use as well, specifically methamphetamine. She had recently been hired as a night auditor at the Holiday Inn on the south side of La Crosse, basically checking people in and washing towels, things like that. Her shifts would begin at 11 p.m., and they would end at 7 a.m. the next morning. Bridget said that she would work all night and then spend her days hanging out, often doing meth with other friends and acquaintances, or basically anyone who wanted to get high, which is how she ended up in a hotel room Thursday with Nemo, Pang, and Trevor, and how she ended up involved in the series of events that led to their murders. Thursday was Nemo's 24th birthday, and Trevor got a hotel room at the Baymont Inn, not too far from the Holiday Inn where Bridget was working. Now, it's unclear how many days they had this room, but Trevor, Nemo, and Pang had all been at this hotel partying and doing meth along with some other friends. Bridget was friends with Pang and Trevor, but she didn't really know Nemo. She was invited to come to the hotel with the group to hang out when she got off work that morning around 7, so she agreed. Most of the day was spent doing meth in the hotel room, then running back and forth to different places, like Walmart, different people's houses, to the shop to pick up a car. But every time they went somewhere, they always ended up back in that hotel room. There were multiple other people in the hotel room with Nemo, Pang, Trevor, and Bridget as well, including a guy named Michael Vang, who goes by the nickname Bam. Now, Bridget didn't really know Bam. They had really just met, but Bam was very close to both Nemo and Pang, so much so that he considered them both family. Bam had recently come into some money from a personal injury settlement, and he seemed to be pretty generous with it. For example, he paid for a registration fee for Bridget's car that day, even though they didn't really know each other very well. Later that afternoon, while the group was sitting in the hotel room, Bam began to receive messages from a man named Nia Tao, who everyone knows as Kush. Now, Kush is no stranger to the justice system. In 2006, he was found guilty of one count of first degree and one count of second degree, recklessly endangering safety with the use of a dangerous weapon. He was also charged with disorderly conduct in June of 2009. Less than 2 months later, he was charged with bail jumping. 3 weeks after that, driving on a revoked license. Then it seems like just charge after charge. There's trespassing, taking a vehicle without consent, multiple disorderly conduct charges, another bail jumping, criminal damage to property, multiple charges for resisting or obstructing an officer, reckless driving, another reckless endangering with the use of a dangerous weapon, multiple charges for being a felon in possession of a firearm, strangulation and suffocation, battery, fleeing or eluding an officer, theft, multiple charges for receiving or concealing stolen property, and plenty of drug and paraphernalia charges. And that's just what I found in La Crosse County. Kush was also known to be involved with a gang in the area, and the company he kept also seemed to have pretty extensive rap sheets, including his friend that he was with that night, who he referred to as his brother, a man named Cam Ratanasak, who goes by the nickname Black. Black is about 10 years older than Cush, and it's been said in various court documents and during trial that Black seemed to be kind of a superior to Cush. He seemed to be in charge in a lot of ways. Black had a bad reputation with law enforcement and the community. Multiple drug charges, multiple burglary charges, criminal damage to property, theft, driving on suspended license, multiple charges for being a felon in possession of a firearm. He also has strangulation and suffocation charges, multiple counts of battery, disorderly conduct, possession of an electric weapon, and intentionally pointing firearm at a person. Between Cush and his buddy Black, it took me hours to go through their court records for all their previous charges. Cush and Black aren't the type that you want on your bad side. But according to Cush's calls to Bam that evening, that's exactly where Nemo and Pang had landed. According to Bam, Cush and Black were looking for Nemo and Pang because they believed that Nemo stole money and Pang was with him when he did it. The story that he told was that Nemo and Pang were hanging out with Black and Cush one night when Black fell asleep. While he was asleep, he said that his credit card was stolen and swiped for a total of $618, and he believes it was Nemo who did it, and Pang was there with him. So now, Cush and Black were hunting down Nemo and Pang to make them pay. Bam felt like he was now in a bad position. He had known Nemo since they were young, and he said that he considered Nemo and Pang his family. But he had also known Cush for somewhere around 15 years, and he didn't know Black, but he knew that he had been recently released from prison and that he isn't someone to be messed with. Nemo denied taking the money, and Bam believed him, but Cush and Black were insistent. Bam and Cush got into a pretty heated argument over this. Cush called Bam some disparaging words, including some gang insults, and both Black and Cush accused Bam of hiding Nemo and Pang. Bam just wanted to make this whole situation go away, and he had the settlement money that he had received, so he said that he would just pay the $618. Black told Bam, "That's not how we do this." He said he didn't want the money. He wanted his life. Nemo was scared. Cush and Black had held a gun to his head before. He knew they were dangerous, and he told Bam that Cush had even put one in his mouth before when he was threatening him. Bam told Nemo and Pang they needed to run. He told them that they are not safe and they needed to get out of there ASAP and not come back. They decided that they would ride with Bridget out of the area. Bridget needed to ride out to pick up her birth certificate and go drop it off at the Holiday Inn for her new job, so Nemo and Pang decided to go with her. When Bam was talking about the phone calls and messages that he was getting from Cush and Black while he was in the hotel room, he said he thought that Bridget had also received a call from them. He remembered seeing her on the phone and said that she looked scared, and he thought it was Cush and Black that she was talking to. Now, Bridget has her own history with Cush and Black. She met Cush a few months prior to this while they were using at someone's house, and she said on the stand that she had been intimate with him. But they were really more just friends, and things didn't change or get weird between them after that happened. Actually, Cush later introduced Bridget to Black, and she had now known Black for just a few weeks. But the night before all of this happened, she and Black had hooked up in a hotel room while Cush waited outside by Black's car. She said Black hadn't talked to her at all that day since that happened, at least until now. Bridget talked on the stand about the dynamic between Cush and Black, explaining that even though they referred to themselves as brothers, it seems like they didn't really interact that much around each other. But from what she could see, Black seemed to be in control. Bridget took Nemo and Pang with her, and Trevor had to run drop off his girlfriend and their children, so she said that they could swing by and pick him back up while they were out. Bam and a few others were still at the hotel room at Baymont Inn. Now, even though Nemo and Pang had left the hotel room, the messages from Cush and Black to Bam didn't stop. Around 10:45 that night, Bam told Cush and Black that he made Nemo and Pang leave the hotel room because they didn't want to be involved in whatever was happening. Cush and Black weren't backing down, though. Around 1:30 a.m., Cush sends another message to Bam saying, "Let's talk." He tells him that he's on the way there. He says, "I'll see you soon," and asks what hotel room number he's in. Bam said that he didn't want anything to do with this, so he wouldn't give him the room number. But he assured Kush again that Nemo and Pang aren't there. The messages continue, with Kush and Black wanting to know what hotel room Bam is in, and Bam refusing to say. Bam said that he thought that Kush and Black were going to give Nemo and Pang a beatdown to make them pay for the $618. And knowing that they weren't going to give up, he finally sent a message back to Kush and Black saying, "Some of us talked, and you can have them." We'll be right back after this.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
During all of this, Bridget, Nemo, Pang, and Trevor were still riding around in the area. Before going to Holiday Inn to drop off her birth certificate, the group stops at Walgreens. And while they're in there, someone actually approaches Bridget and says, "You know they're being looked for, right?" referring to Nemo and Pang. Word must have got back to Kush and Black that Nemo and Pang were seen with Bridget, because around 1:45 a.m., Bridget gets a call from Black, asking if she knew where they were. Bridget said she knew they weren't looking for them for a good reason, and Nemo and Pang didn't want Black and Kush to know where they were. So Bridget covered for them. She said she doesn't know where they are, and she said that she's taking Trevor to the north side right now, and Nemo and Pang aren't with them. Black told Bridget to put Trevor on the phone. He wanted to verify that her story was true. She handed Trevor the phone, and he told Black that Bridget is taking him to the north side, lying to cover up for Bridget, Nemo, and Pang. They hang up, and Bridget is still heading toward the Holiday Inn with Nemo, Pang, and Trevor all riding with her. A few minutes later, Bridget's phone rings again. It's Black, and when she answers, Black reads off Bridget's license plate number and then asks, "Is that you?" Bridget's heart sinks. She now knows that Black and Kush are directly behind her, and they know that she lied. Bridget pulled into the Holiday Inn around 2 a.m., and when she pulled into park, Black pulled up right next to her car, and he and Kush got out and walked toward her car. She saw Black pull out his gun and pointed at Nemo, telling Nemo to get in his car. Bridget grabbed her birth certificate and walked inside. She made some small talk. She said that she had only worked there for a few days and she didn't want to draw attention, so she just acted like everything was fine. When she came back out, Black was pointing the gun at her and told her to listen to what he says. Nemo was now in the passenger seat of Black's car, and Kush was now sitting in the seat directly behind Bridget's, waiting for her to get in so that he could give her instructions. Kush calls Bam at the hotel room, telling him that he now has all of them. Bridget hears the conversation, and she hears Bam say okay and hang up the phone. Kush then looked at Pang and asked, "How does it feel to have your own family sell you out?" Bridget was instructed to follow Black's car, and at some point, Kush told her to pass Black, and he gave her directions as they drove toward the quarry. Trevor was nervous on the way there. He was telling Kush that he had two beautiful daughters at home, hoping that Kush would spare him if he knew that he had children to take care of. When they arrived, she missed the turn into the quarry driveway, so she had to turn around and then pull into the drive. Black missed it too, so he turned around and then he backed in on the passenger side of Bridget's car. Cush told Bridget to pull in and leave the lights on. It was dark out there, there's no lights, so her headlights were the only lights that they had. Everyone got out of the cars, and they were all standing kind of in between where both cars had parked. Black, who was holding the gun, hit Trevor in the head with it, telling him that was for lying to him on the phone about Nemo and Pang being with them. Black then instructed Nemo, Pang, and Trevor to get on their knees and crawl towards the gate. He told Bridget that she could shut up and get in front of her car, or get on her knees and join them, and he would put her in the trunk along with these guys. The boys went up and lined up by the gate, each on their knees, with their hands on their heads. Cush kicked Nemo in the chest, and Black instructed them to empty their pockets. Black then turned to Cush and said, "You better do this before I do," then gave the gun to Cush and got back in his car. Bridget said that Cush walked back and forth for a little bit. Then he muttered something like, "F it," and then shot all three of them one by one. She thinks that he fired three shots at each, and she didn't see him shoot Pang or Nemo, but she remembers looking at Trevor, who was looking back at her. She and Trevor's eyes were locked for the last seconds of his life when he was shot in the temple. Bridget said she still sees that image in her head to this day. Black and Cush got in the Mercedes and drove away. Bridget stood there for a second, then got back in her car and left. She didn't know her way around, and she was in shock. She said she just drove trying to find her way. When she saw the Mercedes in front of her, she slowed down because she didn't want them to see her headlights. She just wanted to get away from them. She took out her GPS and put in the Holiday Inn where she works, thinking that going there would be safe because there are cameras. Bridget said that she didn't call the police right away. She was in denial about what had just happened right in front of her. She was scared and believed that they were going to come get her after that. On the way to Holiday Inn, she got a call from Bam asking when she was coming back to the hotel. She responded by saying, "Do you not know what just happened?" But she said Bam didn't respond. Black and Cush then began trying to call Bridget. Cush wanted her to come meet him at the Hotel 6 so that they could get their story straight about what had just happened. Bridget said she didn't want to meet him because after what he just did in front of her, she didn't think that he would let her live if she went to meet him now. Cush told Bridget that she was a good friend, and then he hung up. She got a text from Black not to tell anyone what just happened. And Bridget said that she got scared and just wanted everything off her phone, so she began deleting their text and anything else to do with it. She said she just wanted it all gone. Bridget pulled into the Holiday Inn at 2:53 a.m. and parked in front of an exterior camera. She locked her car, rolled up the windows, sat back, hoping to hide herself. Bridget had been up for about 3 days at that point, so she ended up falling asleep for about 4 hours. When she woke up, she drove back to the Baymont Hotel where she still had her belongings, and then she said that she just started driving. She said she was still in shock, and she ended up driving to a friend's house where she stayed for a couple of hours. She told her friend everything that had just happened, and then drove to the police station where she was interviewed for 11 hours. The officer interviewing Bridget said that she was very distraught. She was crying and disorganized. And while talking to police, Bridget wasn't forthcoming in the beginning. Some of this isn't surprising. She had only slept for a few hours in 3 days, and she was coming off drugs, she was in shock, and she was really scared of what was going to happen to her. Plus, Bridget said that she didn't really have good interactions with the police before, so she didn't trust them. Her story changes and evolves, and it's clear that she was hoping to minimize her involvement in everything at first. For example, she originally said that she didn't know the names of the two guys, but she says that she meant she doesn't know their real names. She did tell police that they went by Cush and Black. She said she doesn't know what happened. She said she found out on Facebook. And then she said that they had a gun to her head, but that she left. So she doesn't tell them about her deleting the text from them, but as time goes on, they are able to pull more details out of her, even if it was reluctantly. Especially at first. Bam said that he heard about what happened to Nemo, Pang, and Trevor when he was on his way home from the hotel that morning. Nemo's mom called him crying. She asked Bam to call the police, and he did. Bam said that Nemo was family, and he understood street justice, so he believed that Kush and Black were going to rough Nemo up over the money. But he had no idea they were going to murder Nemo, much less Pang and Trevor. And because he understood street justice, Bam told the police, "If you don't get them, we're going to get them." The witness interviews told quite a story, and now the police at least had a good idea of what could have happened, even though some of the details were foggy, and their stories needed to be corroborated with evidence. The crime scene tech arrived at the scene of the quarry around 10:45 a.m., but like I said earlier, the day was already hot and windy, which causes the issues with the tire and foot impressions in the soft sand or dirt. They can deteriorate in those conditions and lose detail or be completely destroyed in the elements. So documenting those was prioritized. Investigators located 10 Winchester 40 caliber silver shell casings scattered close to the bodies, but no murder weapon. The autopsies were done, and they line up with the story that Bridget told. Nemo had 4 bullet entry wounds. 2 were on the back of his head, 1 in his hand, and a 4th midway up his back along his spinal cord. So the first shot is believed to have been to the back of the head while he had his hands on his head like he had been instructed to do. So it went through his hand into his head. Then he was shot again in the head and then again in the back. Pang also had 4 wounds, lining up basically just the same as Nemo. He had 1 in his hand and then the back of his head, consistent with having his hands on his head like instructed, and then the other 2 were in his back and his neck. Trevor's autopsy report showed an injury to his mouth, which lines up with having been hit with the gun, like Bridget said. Trevor had 3 gunshot wounds, 1 that entered the back of his neck and traveled up along his jaw, 1 that traveled through his arm, and 1 that was fired just left of his temple, which is exactly where Bridget said he was shot when they had locked eyes in the last seconds of his life. The Mercedes that Black drove was found abandoned in a remote area in Green Bay. It's registered to a woman named Virginia, so police were sent out to do a check on her to make sure that she was okay. It turns out Virginia was an on-again, off-again girlfriend of Black's. She had been known to give him money and cars and things like that, but their relationship was pretty toxic according to the people close to her. The day of the 23rd, that Friday, while police are on the scene at the quarry trying to piece together what happened, Virginia was at home with her friend, a man named Todd Weckler. Mr. Weckler knew Black, and he didn't seem fond of him based on his statements to police. Mr. Weckler said that Black showed up at Virginia's with another guy who he didn't really get a good look at. Prosecutors, of course, believed that that other guy was Kush. Later on that day, Virginia handed Mr. Weckler a couple bags of clothes that she said had belonged to Black. She said that they had broken up again and she wanted to get rid of that stuff. Mr. Weckler lived out in the country and he had a burn barrel that he would use to get rid of old clothes and things like that. It's something he had done for Virginia before. Mr. Weckler said that he didn't look through the bags when she handed them over. It wasn't until he got them home that he opened them up. When he went to pull the bags from his car, he said a box of bullets fell out of the bag. Now, obviously, that raises some eyebrows. So he went through the bags and he said that he found some bullets, which were .40 caliber, a holster, a magazine for a Glock, and a couple of cell phones along with the clothes. He put the gun items in a bag and put them in his room, unsure of what to do with them at the time. He put the clothes in the burn barrel, but the cell phones he took to a kiosk at Walmart and turned them in for cash. Now, when the police came to talk to him, he gave them the bag that he had of the bullets and the gun stuff and told them what he did with the cell phones. And they also collected what was in his burn barrel. Now, as it turns out, the Wisconsin Department of Justice had already been tracking one of those cell phones, so they were able to see that it was at the Walmart in Sturgeon Bay. They went and were able to get both phones that Mr. Weckler had sold to the kiosk. They also went and spoke to Virginia and ended up getting a download of her phone as well. They did a search of her home and garage, and they found a bag with receipts in it. One of the receipts was from a card.com account and had Kush's name, Nia Tau, printed on it. There were also two Quick Trip receipts from a La Crosse location on July 20th. The first was about 10 minutes before midnight, and the second was 8 minutes later. About a week after the murders, a U.S. Marshals fugitive team made their way to a residence in a nearby town to arrest Kush. Now, they arrived around 2 a.m., and the actual door was open, but there was a screen door that they could see through to the inside. They called for anyone in the house to come forward, and they see someone come out from the kitchen area into their eyesight. Now, this guy didn't match the description that they had been given. He was an Asian male, about the same age range, but he had long hair, and they were given the description of Kush as having a bald head. When the guy came out, one of the marshals noticed that he had a tattoo on his arm that said Tau, which is Kush's last name. Then they noticed that the hair was actually a wig, which they then removed. We'll be right back after this. The holiday season is just around the corner, and we're all looking for ways to spend and stress less. HelloFresh makes mealtime nearly hassle-free with delicious, home-delivered, chef-crafted recipes that come together quick and are less expensive than takeout. Whether you're craving hearty comfort food, trying to please picky eaters, or looking for a calorie-smart meal plan, HelloFresh has all those options and more available on a rotating menu of 50 recipes to choose from every week. Step out of your recipe rut and make fun, flavorful meals without needing to hunt for specialty ingredients. And HelloFresh's pre-portioned ingredients mean less food waste. I've actually loved using HelloFresh because I love to have home-cooked meals, but life has kept me busy lately, and it's been hard to find time to cook, much less grocery shop. So I end up wasting so much food because of that. But with HelloFresh, I do the quick and easy meal plan, so all the meals are pre-portioned, easy to follow, and they're ready to eat in less time than it would take for me to get delivery here. Plus, I have loved everything that they've sent. And a lot of the meals are ones that I wouldn't have necessarily chosen to cook for myself, but man, were they good. Get 10 free meals at HelloFresh.com/freebrandy. That's B-R-A-N-D-I. It's applied across 7 boxes, new subscribers only, and it varies by plan. That's 10 free HelloFresh meals. Just go to HelloFresh.com/freebrandy to try America's number one meal kit. Kush was taken into custody, and the marshals went through the house and collected some personal things of interest. One thing they got was a backpack with a notepad that had some writing in it that specifically mentioned Bridget. The page was shown during trial, and the writing said, "Notes on Bridget's motive," and then there was a little list. So it looks like Kush was making notes to give a motive of why Bridget would tell police that he killed Nemo, Pang, and Trevor, possibly hoping to explain it away so that they don't believe her. The list said, "Bridget dislikes me. Nosy in her way of what I do, and that led her to target." The next page said things like, "Don't indulge her," "Silent treatment," "Never gets what she wants," "I stand in the way of her getting plugged," which prosecutors say refers to her getting connected to the person providing the drugs, also known as the plug. The defense says an interpretation of this could be plugged, meaning getting killed. Now, I've heard of plug in the drug reference sense, but I've never heard it referencing being killed. But the jury is able to interpret that how they choose. The next section in the notebook says, "Why me?" And under that, he has written, "Easy target," "Slow and stupid," "Illiterate," "Don't know how to explain points and views," "Blunt," and "Words mean different things." Now, investigators believe that Kush was already plotting on how to try to get out of this, knowing that Bridget would probably tell them everything. Black was found at a home in Amherst, located east of Stevens Point, and taken in by the Portage County Sheriff's Office after attempting to flee from police during a traffic stop. Police continued building a case against Kush and Black, including getting the Facebook Messenger conversations from their accounts. Now, something that was really interesting here, the witnesses all seemed to have believed that the money that Nemo was accused of stealing belonged to Black. But Facebook records from a little less than a week before the murders tell a little bit of a different story. Cush's Facebook message show that he messaged someone asking if they had seen his debit card. And he said that it was gone and so was his money. He said he was bummed because it was all he had. And a few hours later, he messaged again saying Nemo must have taken it. Now that was on July 17th, and the next day, Nemo's records show that he tried to call someone named Nicole multiple times, but she wasn't answering. The first call was at 11:17, and then another one 14 minutes later. Again, 2 minutes later, all unanswered. Then, a couple hours later, he tries again. More outgoing calls that go unanswered. He then sends a message to Nicole that says, "All right, bitch, have it your way, LMFAO. Right after that, he sends a message that says, "Tell Nemo he won't show himself. I'm going for his family." There were also messages from a couple weeks before the murders when Cush is telling Nemo that he needs to get that $80 to his big bro, which is believed to be a reference to Black. And he tells Nemo, "Real talk, he ain't playing games." He says that multiple times. The next day, Cush sends messages to Nemo saying, "Games, games, hours gone," and tells Nemo he's too late. He asks again after that when Nemo will get the money. And on July 20th, which was just a couple days before the murders, Cush messages Nemo again, telling him that they need to see the money because Big Bro needs tires. Now, in these messages from Cush, there are multiple other conversations with people where he refers to Black as Big Bro. They know this because he says things like driving Big Bro's Mercedes today, and he asks someone if he can come over with his Big Bro, Black. Prosecutors show this to the jury to establish that the conversations that he's having are referencing Black. In April of 2023, there was a new development in this case. A man who lives on County Road M, where the quarry is, was off work that day, and it was beautiful weather outside, so he and his wife decided to go for a walk. They came across a bag while they were walking, like a reusable type bag, and decided, it's spring, it's pretty out, let's use this bag and we can pick up some trash on our road while we're walking. It's something that they've done to keep their road beautiful before. Now, he took one side of the road and his wife took the other, and they walked along picking up aluminum cans and trash, things like that. The man's wife then spots something and tells him to come over to where she's at. He walks over there and she points at what appears to be a handgun. Now, this man was actually a certified hunter safety instructor, so he was very experienced with firearms. He said that he snapped a couple of pictures first, and then he used the back of his finger to lift it up to see if it was, in fact, a gun, or if it was just an airsoft gun or something like that. So he saw the make, model, and caliber stamped on the slide, so he knew that it was a real Glock, a .40 caliber Smith & Wesson. He says he dropped it back down and put a little grass over it just to make sure that nobody else found it when they finished their walk. When he got home, he called his friend, who's a police officer, and his friend recommended that he call the sheriff's department non-emergency line and report it. An hour or so later, the sheriff's deputy arrives at his house and he takes him to the place where he and his wife had seen the gun. The deputy looked at it and said that he felt like there were at least 2 rounds left in the magazine, and he believed there to be one in the chamber, but because the gun was rusted over, he was unable to rack the slide back to check. There was also some sort of black elastic rubber band around the gun. A tool mark examiner was given the 10 fired casings that were found on scene, along with the Glock and some projectiles. Now, because of the rust and the condition of the gun, it was inoperable when she got it. So she cleaned it, added some gun oil, and then she replaced the guide rod and spring so that she could fire it so that she could compare the markings to the spent cases. Now, some of what she was able to compare was inconclusive, so it couldn't be ruled out, but it also couldn't be confirmed. But she was able to confirm that the fired shell cases did come from the Glock found on the side of the road. Also, the serial number of a Glock is usually located in 3 places, once on the chamber part of the barrel and once on the slide. And in this case, the number was filed off in both of those places. The third location of the serial number is a metal insert on the frame in front of the trigger, but that was removed as well. Now, there's nothing that can really be done about the plate that was removed, but where the number was filed off, it still actually exists. Filing it off doesn't remove that serial number completely. The tool expert was able to use a series of physical and chemical restoration techniques, and she was able to restore the serial number from both of those places. They could determine that the gun was purchased at a Gander Mountain location in Analaska, which is nearby. But since Gander Mountain is out of business, those sales records are not available, so they weren't able to identify who the original purchaser was. Now, the Glock 40 is a big deal here for a few reasons. One, the area where it was found was on the road that leads to the quarry. And if it was thrown out the window while they were leaving, based on the direction they went, it would have been thrown out the passenger side, which is where Cush was sitting. Also, a guy named Michael Luco testified that he saw Cush days before this happened at someone's house. And Cush said that he was looking for Nemo and then showed him a Glock 40. He told police about this in August of 2021, and another witness also testified to seeing Cush with a gun about a week before the murders, and then 2 years later, a Glock 40 is found, so it seems to corroborate this detail. Now, this same guy also testified that he got locked up while Cush and Black were in jail, and he talked to Cush through the vents or the windows in their cell doors or something to that effect. He said that Cush told him what happened, and he said that he was with Black and Bridget when it happened, that Black drove the car there and then handed him the gun. He told him about Black hitting Trevor in the mouth with the gun, and also said that he shot Nemo, then Pang, then Trevor, in that order. Once in the back of the head, and then three or four other shots. This lines up with what Bridget said about Trevor being last and the number of shots fired for each. And it lines up with the autopsy reports. Michael Luco was transferred to another cell block after that, which happens to be the same one that Black was in. Black's private investigator brought Luco out to talk to him, and the defense actually implied that Luco is just making this up to protect himself from Black. In fact, that's pretty much the defense's entire theory. They say that Black is the one who's responsible, and Cush was just a witness to it all. They work to try to discredit Bridget, saying that she's scared of Black, and that's why she's saying it was Cush. They suggest that the calls between Bridget and Cush after the murders were because they were both scared about what had just happened, and they say that Black is a heartless, untrustworthy person with no credibility, who only came up with this story in order to get himself a plea deal that would hopefully get him out of prison. They also bring up Black's history of violence with women and point out that the women who have been involved have recanted their stories to police out of fear. They argue that Bridget knew this, and she even told police that Black is someone that you don't want to cross or he'll hurt you. And they say that that's why she's going along with Cush being the trigger man, because she's scared not to. So what does Black say happened? He basically says he didn't do anything and he doesn't know what happened. He said that when they got there, he put the gun on the hood of his car, but he was worried about Bluetooth. His phone wasn't connected to his car, and he was messing with a playlist or something, so he got back in and just sat there trying to connect his phone to the car, and he doesn't know what happened. He said Cush got in and they drove off. Now, Black was called to testify in Cush's first trial, and that's the story that he gave. The first trial ended with a hung jury, and a few months later, Black did make a deal with prosecutors. He took a plea deal where he agreed to plead guilty to one count of being a party to the crime of first-degree intentional homicide for the death of Nemo Yang. The charges that he faced for the deaths of Pang Lohr and Trevor Maloney were dismissed as part of his plea deal, but they were read into the record, which means that they can be considered at sentencing by the judge. Black was sentenced to life in prison, but is able to petition the court for release after 35 years in prison. Now, that doesn't mean it will be granted, but he's able to ask for it after 35 years. A judge will then review the case and determine if he is to be released. If he is, he will remain on extended supervision for the remainder of his life. 1 week after his 37th birthday, Cush sat next to his lawyer in a La Crosse County courtroom, ready to undergo his second murder trial. This time, the state did things a little differently. They didn't call Black to testify this time, but they did call Bridget again, and Bam. Bam showed up to testify in an orange jumpsuit. He had been arrested on an unrelated crime and was serving time. None of the family or friends of Nemo, Pang, or Trevor were called to testify, but some of them were there for both trials. There were 4 days of testimony while the state presented their case. The defense didn't call any witnesses. They relied on the cross-examinations and just hoped that they were able to show some kind of reasonable doubt. The jurors were sent home that Thursday, and Friday morning they heard closing arguments. They were given their instructions and then began deliberations. They were unable to reach a decision that day, but after a weekend of rest, they came back on Monday and continued. After a total of about 10 hours of deliberations, the jury found Nia Tao, aka Kush, guilty on all counts. $618. That's it. Just $618. Three lives were taken from this earth, and countless others changed. All over $618. Black will be more than 80 years old by the time he's eligible to even try to get out of prison. And even then, a judge will have to review the case and decide. He was given a deal for pleading guilty, but Kush took his chances and went to trial, so his conviction will be for 3 counts, one for each of the murders. So the chances of him ever seeing the free world again are slim to none. Trevor Maloney told Kush on the way to the quarry about his 2 beautiful girls at home. His Facebook profile is a picture that he posted just a couple months before his murder, where he's holding those 2 beautiful girls on his lap, a proud father with a big smile. His Facebook bio reads, "I'm wrapped around my beautiful daughter's little fingers," and then has some love emojis. Peng Lor's family has a social media page in remembrance of him, and the photos really remind you of how young he and the other victims are. He's smiling in the picture, and his family leaves comments mourning their loss and expressing how much they miss him. Nemo Yang, who is at the center of this tragedy, has a photo on his social media profile where he has a red bandana draped across his shoulder. It was posted just a month before his murder, and I can't help but wonder if it's the same bandana that was found on the road by the gruesome scene on County Road M. It's always a tragedy to have a life taken, but to have 3 of them taken at such young ages and over such a minor thing. 3 young men that never got to live their lives, to see what they may have become. 3 families that will grieve this loss for the rest of their lives. And all of that over $618. The sentencing for Kush is scheduled for December 2nd. The families will often attend and deliver victim impact statements, which is always the hardest part of the trial to me, but it's also the most important. After the victims' families are able to say their piece, the judge will deliver the sentence, and there will finally be justice for Nemo Yang, Peng Lor, and Trevor Maloney. If you're enjoying 13th Juror Podcast, please leave us a review on Apple and Spotify, and share this episode with your friends. For more information, photos, and episode guides, visit 13thjurorpodcast.com.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.